Welcome to this mini-series of podcasts for World Athletics, where myself, Liliana O'Hora, the Women in Sport Manager with Athletics Ireland, and Vicky Hyten, the founder of the Female Coaching Network, will be interviewing a number of coaches who had a role at this year's World Championships in Eugene. Whether it be as a team coach or a personal coach, we want to find out more about their experiences at the World Championships, what their roles involved, and how they managed through the busiest of summers to date.
We are very excited to welcome our latest guest to this podcast, which is Laura Turner Alleyne. Laura is an Olympian and former sprinter for Great Britain, having competed at the Beijing Olympics, four World Championships, European Championships, and Commonwealth Games, winning gold in the 4x100 in Delhi in 2010. Laura's been coaching full-time since 2014, co-founding the West London Track and Field Club alongside fellow coach Ellie Cormis shortly after retiring. Alongside her club coaching, Laura is also a team coach for various GB teams and has been involved since 2018 with coaching the future of British track and field with the British Athletics Futures Academy. During one of the busiest seasons for track and field this year, Laura has been supporting a number of her athletes, including heptathlete Holly Mills, as Holly competed in the World Indoor Championships, the European Championships, and the Commonwealth Games. And amongst her personal coaching, Laura also managed to fit in a number of team coach duties at the World Championships, European Championships, and the Commonwealth Games, as well as being team leader at the under 20 Mannheim International for GB. So Laura, having had a couple of weeks to reflect on your season and listening to that very long list of events that you were involved in this season, are you okay? How did you get through it? How did you manage it all?
Yeah, it was a pretty crazy summer. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. It was nuts, and I did, when I was asked to do all of it, I did, initially I thought, yeah, I'll be fine, and then I kind of reached out to a few people and just said, do you think I can do this? And everyone that I spoke to was pretty positive about it, so yeah, I did it, and I think I did okay, and I didn't feel like it was too much for me. Certainly September I recovered, so yeah, I spent September kind of relaxing at home. Everyone said to me, you're going on holiday, and I said, no, I need to stay at home for a little bit, I think. So yeah, I spent September at home and saw family and friends, and yeah, I'm ready to go again now.
I saw a tweet that you posted on the 6th of July, which was a photograph of your GB rucksack with your passport on it, saying see you at the end of August. Yeah. You know, best part of 2 months being away from home. Like, I know you've said, like, you know, you were asking friends, like, do you think I can do this? But I mean, how was it from a personal point of view of obviously potentially getting homesick, missing friends and family, but in terms of managing your own energy, because there's so much focus on how the athlete's going to get through the season, but no one ever really says, how's the coach going to get through? So yeah, what was that like from you knowing such a massive chunk of time away from home?
I think first about the homesick thing, since I was an athlete, I've been used to going away for a long time. So since I've known my husband, which has been 20 years now, I've always been away for big chunks of time. So that's normal for us. I'd be away for longer, like an 8-week training camp, for example. So that side of track and field, I'm very much used to now and become accustomed to. And I don't really get homesick as such. I'm pretty good with kind of compartmentalizing and staying present with where I am and kind of getting on with what I'm doing where I am. And in terms of managing my energy, that was my kind of big thing for the summer. I wanted to make sure that I started and finished with the same energy levels, and I wasn't kind of compromised in any way in that respect. So I did speak to Paula Dunn, who was our team leader, and she was really keen as team coaches that we all managed our energy and had downtime. And for me, it's exercise. When I'm away, I need to make sure I train. So she was really good with kind of pushing that on us all the time and making sure we're looking after ourselves. So that was really, really helpful. So yeah, I guess that's how I did it. For me, I know what I need to do to survive while I'm away. I need to have time on my own. I need to exercise and I need to have a coffee in the morning. As long as I've got those three things, then I'm pretty much okay.
I love that. So obviously you're number one, you've got that experience of being an athlete, of being away for chunks of time, and it sounds like you had a lot of support from the GB team with Paula Dunn. But did We've asked this to the other coaches that we've interviewed. Do you think that there is enough emphasis put on the coach well-being during championships? And do you think it's something that potentially World Athletics or European Athletics, whoever's hosting that championships, potentially should put a bit more focus on, provide coaches with a little getaway room? Or do you think they focus on coach well-being enough, and what can they do?
I know from a GB perspective, and I haven't only been involved with the seniors this year from a GB perspective, Paula and Christian, when we had our coaches meeting every night at the championships, they were making sure everyone was okay. They were checking in on us every day, either one-to-one or in the meetings. They were making sure everyone was kind of helping each other out. And you could kind of see if your colleagues were flagging or if someone needed some time out. So I feel that as a GB team this year with the staff, we were really well supported with that. And really, really good environment in terms of the other team staff that we were on the trip with. So from a GB perspective, really well handled this year, and I've got no other experience for as a team staff to know what happened previously. I wasn't aware of anything was happening kind of globally on that respect for coaches. I guess because we were so well looked after from a GB perspective, we didn't really need anything else. But it'd be interesting to hear from other countries how they kind of felt in that respect.
Yeah. So reflecting back on the season that has just gone, how do you kind of reflect on your own performance as a coach and a leader in all the various roles that you had, whether it was team coach duties, personal coach duties? Are there any particular lessons that you think you've learned about your performance in your roles that you would like to take into next season?
Well, that's a huge question. How long have you got? So at the end of the season, I went through a decompression process, and it sounds a little bit deep of a thing to go to, but we were sent this by our kind of team back home at British Athletics. And it's something that you might get an email about and you think, oh yeah. But actually I was really mindful that I did it this year because I was aware that it was such a big summer, and I wanted to make sure that I, one, learned from it, and two, recovered from it. So I did go through, I took myself off to a spa for a whole day just by myself. It was lovely. And I kind of went through this decompression process, which was essentially just reflecting on all the different championships that I'd done and any significant events, any significant people within those events, what I learned, how I behaved, et cetera, et cetera. So I have gone quite deep into all of this with all the things that I've done. If I do it chronologically, because it's easier for my brain to work. So Mannheim was the first thing where I was team leader. And I really enjoyed that. It was my first experience being a team leader. There was a lot to do before I went out there. So there's a lot of communication with the meet organizer before we left and getting everything organized. And we obviously had the COVID thing, who's vaccinated, we had all that drama to deal with. When we actually got there, my job was really to look after the team staff. So making sure they were all happy with what they're doing, support them if they needed anything. And actually the day-to-day stuff, the team leader was a lot easier than a team coach in one way. I don't want to disrespect team leaders in that respect, but as a team coach, I'm used to being kind of juggling and being aware of many athletes doing many different things during the day. But as a team leader, it felt a lot calmer, and I was able just to kind of walk around and watch all the athletes and coaches working together at all the different events, which was really, really nice for me to get an idea of what everyone was doing rather than just kind of being stuck in my speed bubble. So I really enjoyed that. So that was the Mannheim team leader, and then we went to the World Champs. So that I went from being kind of the team leader at Mannheim to the World Champs, where I was probably the most inexperienced coach there. First time on the senior team outdoors, so that was a very different kind of place in the team for me personally there. And I just soaked up as much as I could from all the guys that I was working with on the staff there. So I think that for me was just a massive learning experience in Oregon. I had the best time in Oregon. I laughed a lot. We had a really, really good time out there. All the coaches just got on really, really well. And then Commonwealth Games was tough. I would say Commonwealth Games was hard. So that the atmosphere at the Commonwealth Games was incredible. I've never experienced a stadium, an atmosphere like it. The crowd are amazing. The stadium, the fireworks, just... It gave me goosebumps every day for the whole championships. It was just absolutely amazing. But it was brutal in terms of the travel backwards and forwards from the village to the track. It could be up to 45 minutes on some days. And I just come from Oregon, where it was a 3-minute walk from my room to the track. So it was a bit of a different kind of environment there. The timetable was quite brutal, early starts, late finishes. Again, Oregon was a reasonably nice timetable in that respect. So the Commonwealth Games I found harder, just because of the kind of logistics surrounding around, and I might have been a bit tired from Oregon, probably that was there as well. And then obviously the Commonwealth Games, I had the added, we'll start dropping a bomb of Holly competing as well. So I had that for 2 days to manage on top of my speed coach role. So, and obviously that was a bit of a tough 2 days, shall we say, with Holly. So then I had to quickly learn how to go from those 2 days of really intense, because she was suffering and she wasn't enjoying, you know, it was a tough 2 days for her. She wasn't where she wanted to be. It was really, really hard. So I think going from the emotion of that with her, to then having to kind of the next day just get straight back into speed coach role, but yet still managing Holly, who was still at the Commonwealth Games. So that for me is an interesting dynamic, and one, sorry, my cat is going to run across, one that I'll have to think about in the future when I've got that kind of crossover between a personal coach and a team coach role. So yeah, Commonwealth Games, I'd say tough. And then I had a few days off, I turned 40, and then I went to the European Champs. Yeah. Oh God, sorry, my cat, she's chasing stuff outside. Went to the Europeans, and that was interesting because between the worlds and the commies, I didn't have any rest. I landed on the Monday and I was straight in on the Tuesday, so I was straight in. But with the Europeans, I had 3 days at home, and one of which was my birthday. I went to a spa again with some girlfriends, and you know, da, 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 da. So I kind of had a bit of a time to kind of come down and relax, and then all of a sudden I had to kind of get back up again. So the first few days at Europeans, I did struggle to kind of get back into the groove of it, but the Europeans was, I guess, that was hard as well. It was hard for a different reason. The Europeans was hard because the team was so big. I was doing some weird dual team coach role at Europeans. I was team coach for combined events but also for speed. So I was looking after Jade and Holly in the heptathlon for those heptathlon 2 days. But then I also had responsibilities for the sprinters and hurdlers outside of that as well. So there was a little bit of juggling involved in that. And again, we had stuff going on with Holly. Jade was absolutely incredible. And Jade's personal coach was out there anyway. So I didn't really have to do much with Jade, just kind of get her onto a bus, make sure she arrived at the venue on time and got into the call room. And then her personal coach was there to look after her. So my team coach role for Jade was very, very easy. She was great. Yeah, there was different challenges at Europeans. I think the team size and again, the juggling of the two different roles. But I think, again, I had Miguel. So I had Holly and Miguel out there. So they were on, they kind of overlapped a little bit their competition. So I didn't actually see Miguel before his semi-final, but you know, he ran a PB and did amazing. So what do I know? He was great. He was absolutely amazing. So I think for me to see him, to see him step up, you know, go to his first championships, his first GB best, and run a PB in the semi-final, I had no words. I just said to him, I think that's just, it was just amazing. And for someone, he's openly said it on social media, so I'm not speaking out of turn here, he was going to stop after this year. He was going to stop competing after this year. And you know, you get to your mid-20s and you start thinking about your career, you know, things outside of athletics. So I completely get it. And I kind of saw this year as a challenge for me to try and keep him in the sport. So yeah, really, really proud that he did that and then has now decided to stay in the sport. So that I think was the highlight for me for Europeans, was keeping Miguel in athletics and seeing him do so well. And then, yeah, I think for me, with then obviously once Miguel and Holly had finished, we had the relays, and I think it was the girls. Yeah, the girls had a tough season, the relay girls. So I'd been, when I was in my speed coach role, I was primarily working with the female relay team there. So I've been with them in Oregon, the Commonwealth Games, and then at the Europeans. So they had a rough summer, a summer like they've never going to experience before. They had some, you know, the final at the World Champs, they were on for something absolutely incredible, and they know it. So that was tough. I mean, poor Dina, that was tough what happened to Dina there. Commonwealth Games, obviously, getting the silver, they know how they feel about that. And then obviously when we come to Europeans and that happens to them at Europeans, I think it was it was a tough finish for me personally to watch them go through that this summer. Yeah. I haven't been involved in their kind of training or anything. I just was brought in for the chance to work with Christian with them. So I kind of got to know them a lot more this summer, and yeah, it was rough for them. It was really, really rough. So a tough ending, but I think on the whole, they should be very proud of what they've achieved and what they know they can probably do going forwards as a relay team. So how would I sum up Europeans? I think that was probably quite tough as well. I did enjoy it again because it was back with that Oregon team that we got on really well before, slightly bigger team, some more coaches out there. So I think the highlight for Europeans was probably Miguel, to be honest, doing so well as he did. So that was quite a nice finish this season.
There's so many questions to ask you, Laura, yeah. About like, I literally even, you know, obviously I know you outside of this interview, so I knew some of the stuff that you were doing, but when I'm sat down, like putting some of the questions together, I'm like, oh my God, did she actually do that as well? Did you do that as well? And it is just hearing all that. Like, I can't get my head around how much stuff you've done. And yeah, but I think one of the things you touched on around being a personal coach and a team coach at the same championship, and it's something that has been brought up before. We first interviewed Ashley Kovacs, who was the USA throws coach, and then obviously had a husband, Joe, that was competing. And how do you manage that? Because I guess it partly depends on how demanding is probably not the right word, but how much your athlete needs you. Some athletes don't need their personal coach as much as others do. But how do you manage that? Well, you've got a list of duties throughout the day as a team coach, but then something might happen where all of a sudden your athlete needs you, or you really want to be there for your athlete, in particular when they're a hepped athlete, when it's the entire day competing. So how do you prioritize who needs what and that kind of thing?
Well, you kind of set your boundaries beforehand. So when it was, if we go back to World Indoors, let's start the year. So World Indoors, I was team coach for combined events. We had one combined eventer. I coached her. So that was really, really easy. And then after Holly'd finished her one day competition at World Indoors, I then stepped in with the speed team. So it was very clear that on that pentathlon day, I was just with Holly, and there was no expectations for me to be with the speed team or help the speed athletes on that day. And that was communicated in advance by Paula. And that was the kind of arrangement going into World Indoors. So really, really easy, boundaries are defined. And then the next time I had that was Commonwealth Games. And again, those 2 days of the heptathlon, because Holly was a medal potential, I was allowed to have those 2 days just with the heptathlon. So my speed duties on those 2 days were relinquished. So that was, again, really easy to manage. I was just 2 days with the heptathlon, and then I could step back into the speed team. The Europeans was probably the hardest one to manage, I would say, because that was the first time I'd been a team coach for combined events and had more than just Holly to look after. Now, I've known Jade for a long time, so that was it was easy because I know Jade and I know her coach John as well. So it made it easy that I knew those guys already. And on those 2 days, yes, I was heptathlon. But then I had Miguel on the second day. So I had personal coach for two athletes, team coach for two athletes. That was quite difficult. I would definitely say that was the biggest challenge that I found. And I did feed that back and say, you know, if going forward, that is something we really need to drill down on. For me, it's just planning in advance. I think you can do anything. All this stuff sounds completely mental and completely crazy. But for me, as long as if I've planned it out and I can see what it looks like, then I can deal with the chaos. And actually, it's not chaos anymore because I've got it all planned out and it's all organized. So yeah, there's probably one sticky moment at Europeans when I probably wanted to see Miguel for that warm up in the hurdles, but he's very self-sufficient. He's you know, he's not a 17-year-old kid. He knows what he's doing. He ran amazing without me in the warm-up. They don't need me in the warm-up, let's be honest. If they do, then we're in trouble. Mm-hmm. So yeah, for me, managing it is just being prepared and being organized and having those conversations in advance with other coaches and the athletes, so everyone knows where I'm going to be at whatever time.
So on that, without wanting to do yourself out of roles next season or in the future, like what do you think about making it a rule where if you have an athlete in the competition, you then can't be team coach. So basically completely separating them so that team coaches never have an athlete in the competition, so that you never have that conflict? Or do you think it is just a case of making sure that you manage it all properly ahead of time?
I think it's just managing it, because if you think, you know, someone might be competing for one, or your athlete's going to compete for 1 or 2 days, regardless of what event you're doing. So if you're at a world championships, which is 10 days long, you're losing out on potentially a really good team coach for 10 days for the sake of 1 or 2 days, right? So I think, and also you've got to remember that the coaches that have athletes there as personal coaches are probably your better coaches, because they've got athletes into a team. So again, you might be losing out on good team coaches for the sake of giving them the personal coach role. So again, I think they can work together, and often they do. Often it's easier when it's just you're a sprint coach and you've got a sprinter in the team. It's just me bringing this craziness into it with the heptathlon that's messed it all up, really. I think if I was just a sprint coach and I just had Miguel there, it would be really, really easy, because I can look after Miguel and I'm looking after the other hurdlers anyway. The only confusion comes when you're going across two event groups, which I am currently doing. But I think, yeah, I think it's just it all comes down to just being organized and planning in advance.
Lillianne.
Sorry, I had to go wandering just to find some actually quiet space. So hopefully you can hear me okay. But like Vicky, or I have loads of questions from a lot of what you had to go through this summer. One thing that I would say is you talked about how it was until all the championships were over, then you had an opportunity to kind of decompress and reflect. Did you have any window of opportunity to kind of reflect on what had happened between the championships, or was it a case of like, no, I have to keep going, because if I stop and think what I'm actually doing, I mightn't get anything done at all? And would you've done anything differently now upon reflection on it all?
So I'm very much I can compartmentalize. I'm very good at staying present. So I deliberately didn't reflect or look back or decompress in between championships. My mindset was from Mannheim until the end of Europeans, I was on, and I needed to stay 100% present in what I was doing at that moment in time. And yes, I did need to obviously look ahead, but I definitely wasn't looking back at that point. So I made the conscious decision when Mannheim started that this was going to be it, 7 weeks, and I'm going to just be on. I'm going to be sensible with what I need to do in terms of managing my energy, having half days here, half days there, training, looking after myself. But I wasn't, that period of time for me wasn't about reflecting. I knew I had September when I was back, that was going to be my time for reflection and looking back on stuff. So that was very deliberate for me. I had regular check-ins with my coach developer back home. So we scheduled in every 2 weeks, we would catch up during that period of time. So I had someone that I can kind of blur to. We often joke that he's my therapist, because I just go, and that was really good. So, and I think we kind of preempted potential issues, potential me struggling with things. But actually, every time we checked in, he would say, "You're doing all right, aren't you?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I actually am doing all right." And I think we were both a little bit surprised at how okay I was doing. But having someone back home was really helpful. And it wasn't necessarily, I was in our hour phone call, I wasn't necessarily reflecting on anything. We were just catching up, and I was just telling him what I'm doing, and he was asking how everything was. So that was quite nice, having someone back home that I could kind of call. I would always recommend someone has that when you're away for a long period of time, having someone back home that's not my husband, that's not my family, that's not my friends. It's someone that I can talk work with. I wouldn't want to phone my husband and chat on the phone for an hour about work to him. That's no. So that was kind of how I, one strategy that I used to get me through that 7 weeks. Would I do anything differently? I probably should say yes at this point. There always has to be something I could have done better, because I'm a bit of a perfectionist. But I think I'm really proud of how I handled the summer. I'm really, really proud of that I did it, and that I think I did it well. And I got to the end. I think the biggest struggle for me was that turnaround between commies and Europeans. So I probably would do something different in those 3 days between. I mean, it was my birthday, so I kind of wanted to chill out a little bit. but maybe I should, yeah, I kind of had that, that was the toughest bit, that turnaround between those two. So maybe rethinking what I did in those 3 days would help me at the start of Europeans. Yeah.
And another question, you spoke there about the kind of coach developer that you kind of, do they act as a mentor, as a friend? Is that a critical friend? Is that someone that you actively sought out? Is that someone that is, you know, from British Athletics, they kind of encourage you to reach out to? Or how did that relationship come about?
Yeah, so the coach developer we work with is through the Futures Programme of British Athletics. So he started working with our wider team, well, as us as a whole team, and then it's kind of turned into the coaches work with him on a one-to-one basis. So I'm usually really good. I haven't spoken to him for a couple, I saw him 2 weeks ago, so that counts, right? We usually check in every 2 weeks. And it's, I like it because I spend all of my time developing athletes and developing people that I work with and putting all my effort into helping them get what they want and be better and achieve their goals and all that kind of thing. And I think amongst all of that, as coaches, we can lose ourselves in that. And you just kind of end up just staying stagnant. I call it treading water. I hate the sense that I'm just treading water. I don't like it and I know sometimes that I do it, and I know sometimes you have to do it. But I'm someone who likes to always be pushing on with things, and whether it's improving what I'm doing or what for me or what I'm doing with the athletes. So every couple of weeks we'll check in, and he'll challenge me on things. He'll steer me down certain paths. What are the goals this year? So the last year's work with him, it was looking at my team leader role. The first time I'd be a team leader, what does that mean? What kind of team leader do I want to be? What skills do I need to improve on? What skills would I need? And all those kind of things. So yeah, that's something through the British Athletics Futures Programme that I utilise.
And another point that you touched on earlier, Laura, around Miguel, and Miguel is someone actually I know through his agency work with Tudo Sport and getting athletes the support and care that they need to get into races to perform to the best of their ability. But a lot of, I suppose, media and research is always around like transitioning athletes from, you know, primary to secondary school to university level, you know, but that university level to maybe career part of an athlete's life is something that probably gets neglected, and people probably don't realize how difficult it was. You said that you worked last year basically just to keep Miguel in the sport. I want to know what strategies they were, because I'm sure there's a number of coaches will be listening to this podcast that can completely relate to what you're saying. But on a second note, from a coaching perspective and an athlete perspective, I was actually in Munich and stood on the eighth hurdle when Miguel was running his semi-final. And I'm sorry, but he just looked like he absolutely deserved to be there. But like, he was made to be there. I just felt like he kind of came into himself there. So when you were talking about like he nearly left the sport, I'm like, but he was born to be there. So how did he go from I'm dropping out to standing on the final, a semi-final, and he was so close to making a final as well? What clicked? What switched? What did you do to keep him there?
I can't remember what the first question was. Oh, the transition from university to career. That for me is a really tough one. And I think, you know, the university age is kind of predominantly where I've been coaching since I started. And it's a really tricky age. And it is a pivotal time in people's careers where they're having to make decisions. They come to the end of their degree and they're having to say, okay, I know that I've put X number of hours into this a week and I've got to this level. Now, if I go and start a full-time job, I'm going to only be able to put X minus 4 hours per week into this. So how am I going to step up to the next level if I'm putting less time in? So I always find myself having conversations with athletes of university age when they're getting towards the end of their degree around being realistic, you know, depending on how good they are. So Miguel's a success story, and we've had Holly now come through university and has transitioned into a full-time athlete. But that's two out of the however many I've coached over the last 8 years that have managed to make that transition. So I think I'm very realistic about what we expect as an athlete and coach, and the time they can put in and what they want to get out of athletics, and actually how hard it is. You know, I'm sure it's great that everyone wants to go to the Olympics, but the reality is you're not all going to the Olympics. So I think it's just being really realistic with how hard it is to become a full-time athlete in terms of numbers. So if we're just looking at, there's so many athletes that are competing and 1% of them will be a full-time athlete. You know, it's really, really hard to do it. So just being realistic with them. What do you want to get out of your athletics? Do you want to just compete, see how far you can go, et cetera, et cetera. I've got an athlete that I've been coaching for 7 years. She won't mind me saying, she's 37. But I reckon after the second year I was coaching her, it's been her last year and we're still here 7 years later. And she'd just come back from World Masters and she came fourth at World Masters. And she's just got a renewed enthusiasm for the sport. She's not getting quicker because she's 37. She's staying pretty much where she was. So why not keep going and keep enjoying it? And for her to go out to World Masters and come fourth, as I say, that gave her a completely new lease of life within her athletics. And it's completely kind of sparked her motivation. And it's brilliant that she's still here after telling me 5 years ago that's probably going to be her last year. So that's fantastic that she's still with us. So yeah, with Miguel, I think when I first started coaching, it was kind of mid-lockdown. So I've never really had a whole year with him until this year. This was the first year that I've actually managed to coach him for a whole year. And he did really well up till Christmas. We got a really good block of training in. And then we got to indoors and he ran PBs, but he picked up a few niggles and injuries. And after indoor season, his hip was hurting. So April wasn't good training either. So it's just a bit patchy. And he's always said to me, oh, I like racing a lot. I love racing a lot. And I've always been like, well, that's not really a great strategy, just racing for the sake of it. Let's try and be a bit more selective with how we race. But it got to a point, we got to May, and I thought, you know what, this could be his last year in the sport. Let's just let him race and let's just see what happens. Like, if that's what he wants to do, let's go. You haven't hardly trained, but who cares? And actually, what we've learned with Miguel is that he doesn't need as much training as I thought he does, apparently. But he's a very rhythm-based runner. So actually, the more races he was doing, the more he was finding his rhythm and the better he was getting. And lo and behold, he has a season of his life. I think he broke his PB like 17 times from last year. He ran under his old PB 17 times this summer. So I guess it was me just going, you know, this could be this guy's last year, not being precious about what my view was about the right thing to do and just letting him go. And it was the best thing we ever did. And now we know that Miguel he responds better to kind of rhythm training. So I can, this year now, I said to him, I'm really confident that I know what works for you. And we can just do loads of rhythm stuff. And yeah, I don't need to hammer him so hard on the training side of stuff. You know, he's mid-20s now. We just get him running over hurdles. We can race him a reasonable amount. But essentially just get out there, enjoy your athletics, get as much experience as you can, go and compete abroad. And yeah, we've kept him.
So when you sit down with Miguel, without going into like obviously your own private plans and how you're going to have world domination, when you sit down this year with him, is it going to be like, look, we're going to still continue to have the fun, race as much as we can, see what will happen? Or do you have to switch it to now of actually like, oh geez, maybe we actually need to put a more of appropriate planning in place here? Or is it a bit of, you need to work with your strategies and his strategies and meet somewhere in the middle?
We're still going with what worked last year. Like, it worked and it could have been better. He whacked hurdle one in that semi-final. I don't know if you remember, but he tore through hurdle one. It was, and I thought, oh God, here we go. But then he managed to claw it back and he was amazing. So we know there's more in the tank there and we know how far we've come this year. So our conversation was, hey, we can just do the same again. As I said, I'm pretty confident. I know what kind of athlete you are now and what you've responded really well to. I think the difference is now the expectation level. So, you know, and I said to him, I'm going to be honest, you can make more teams. You know, you're not just a club runner. I think you could make GB teams for years to come. And I think that's what you should be aiming for. I don't think you should settle now for coming fifth at British Champs. I don't think that's good enough for you anymore. And he absolutely agrees. You know, he's made the commitment to stay in the sport, and I think he actually wants to see where he can take it now. So we've set our goals, we've set our targets, we know what it is we're going for. But yeah, essentially the training's going to stay the same. We know that went pretty well, hopefully without the niggles this year. But the kind of the expectation from both of us has now just stepped up a little bit.
Yeah. And talking about expectations, breaking barriers, breaking boundaries, that's what a lot of your athletes are doing. But on a personal level and professional level, that's exactly what you are doing within your role as a coach. In terms of you being the first ever female team coach in a senior Great British like history of all time. And back in 2021, in February, I remember that they did some research around so the lack of kind of female coaches and the higher level kind of coaching positions. And you're a big advocate for increasing the number of women within high performance track and field. And so what did it really mean to you by being the first British lady, for example?
It was weird because I couldn't quite believe it. I think I might have gone back to Vicky and said, can we just check that's right? Are you sure? So it's great. It's great that someone had to do it. You know, who cares? It was me. Like, we just need, it's just ridiculous that was a thing to begin with. You know, that's why I just, when kind of it transpired that was the case, I was in shock. So yeah, I think it's not great. In fact, it's terrible. But I think it's a really tricky one. How do we, I don't know if you're going to ask me this in a minute, so I might be asking a question already, but you know, how do we address it? I think for me, as a female coach, as a female in high performance sport, you just have to look around when you're at these championships to see you're outnumbered. And you kind of think, well, why? And as much as I enjoyed this year, and I've enjoyed my 8 years of coaching and all the time that I've done on the teams and things, there are a lot of challenges. And I always question, am I having this challenge just because it's a challenge that everyone has, or am I having this challenge because I'm a female? And sometimes it is just because I'm a female that I am having this challenge. And I know that my 10 years as a sprinter on a GB team has toughened me up quite a bit, and I've got quite a thick skin. And I think that's why I've got to where I am, because I've endured, and I can handle these tough environments, because quite frankly, it can be a not nice place for a woman to be in these environments. Certainly historically, I think the landscape's changing now, and certainly this year was different, but I can see why we're at this point, because the environment and the culture has not been right at all. Why would a woman want to be involved? The things that you've heard, the report that we know from a couple of years ago, the things that have been said to women is absolutely outrageous. It's horrendous. So I don't blame the female coaches for not wanting to be part of it, or for not surviving it, because it is really, really hard. So I don't know how we breathe this. Unfortunately, as a woman, we have to be twice as good as our male counterparts, and I feel like that's definitely the case for me. I feel like I'm good at what I do, and I do have to be better than the guys to get the same that they get, and that's the reality of where we are, and that's fine. I'm okay with being good at stuff. It's not a problem. As long as people aren't threatened by that and can handle that, then we're okay. But how do we breed the next generation of female coaches to come through to be that resilient and to understand the nuances? I think we do seriously have to look at our environments. I think this year was definitely different. Definitely having Paula as our team leader. As I say, I haven't been involved previously, but I've obviously been on the scene for a long time. So it was definitely a different vibe. I think that the environment, the culture was a lot more nurturing, was a lot more coach focused, as you've alluded to earlier, and somewhere where I could see other women would want to be. And there were other women on the team. There's Alison Wyeth and Sarah Benson this year, both female coaches on the team as well. Kate Rooney, at European. So there were more of us this year. So, you know, there are females out there, but, you know, all of us had been athletes previously. And I think that's significant. I think you build up a certain mentality or a certain resilience, whatever the word is you want to use, as an athlete. That means you do survive these tough environments.
And Laura, I remember reading an article that you had wrote about before, and it's probably kind of going to echo what you just said there in terms of if you want to see change, you have to be the change. What does the change look like for you? And if you could make one change within athletics, what would it be?
Oh my goodness. Make one change. See the change, be the change. I think for me, it's female coaches doing a good job. So as a coach on the team, I just want to go and do a good job, and I want to be there because I'm good at what I do. So, and then I think what happens is if you go and deliver a good job, then I know there's certain stereotypes around females and how females behave, and we all know what they are. So I think if as a woman, I can go in and deliver a professional job in the same way that a male coach would do, but with slightly different ways of doing things and bring slightly different strengths to the table than a man would do, that's the change. And we're no longer the stereotypical female coach. We are professional as all the other coaches that are there. So for me, it's, yes, I stand up for injustices. I speak my mind. I call people out if I see things that I don't like or I think aren't right. But I see my job as an advocate for female coaches is just being a good female coach, just being a good coach. And I think that is what we need. And I think the more of us that we can get in these environments and start doing these type of jobs, I think that will start changing how those stereotypes and those kind of unconscious and sometimes conscious biases that exist within our environment.
Laura, you need to write a book, I'm telling you. You need to write a book. Right, we have four quick fire questions to finish on.
Okay.
So I only need like a couple of word answers. Okay. So the first one, what is more nerve-wracking, competing or coaching?
Coaching.
First memory that comes to mind from Beijing 2008.
Allergic reaction to a sun cream on my face, and Nicola Sanders had to drag me to the doctors.
The last book you read.
Oh my God. Oh, I know what I'm reading now, Thinking Fast and Slow.
Nice. Oh, me too. And the last one, the best piece of coaching advice you've ever been given.
You can't help everyone.
Amazing. Laura, thank you so much for your time. We kept you a lot longer than we originally said. We had more questions to ask, but we realized we would have kept you the entire morning. But thank you so much for sharing your story. I hope you have had some rest, because I know you're already looking to the Worlds and everything else going on next season. Really appreciate your time, Laura. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Laura. I honestly would have asked you questions all day, so I'm glad Vicky is keeping the time, because you wouldn't have been here until tonight. So thank you so much for your genuine honesty and everything. You've been an absolute pleasure, and we look forward to hopefully seeing you kick on over the next few months with all of your athletes.
Thank you.